Hello, welcome to The Addict's Advocate, a podcast geared towards the suffering addict and those in recovery. This podcast does not provide any medical advice. No material on this podcast is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast. Enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of The Addict's Advocate. I'm your host, Dusty Dean, and it's my pleasure to introduce to you a friend of mine by the name of Ray D. How you doing, bud?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for taking the time in the afternoon with me, bud. I appreciate it. Truly appreciate it. So, you know, like we always do, let's go ahead and start off with a little background on yourself. How did you come to get to be sober and clean?
Man, my using started when I was 12. I remember the first time I smoked a joint. I had got bit by a dog, and I came in the house, and my brother was smoking some or rolling up some weed, and they're all passing it around the table, and he passes it to me, and I look at my mom, and she's like, "It's up to you." And my mom was always the parent who allowed me to learn my lessons, to make choices on my own to an extent, and guide me the best she could, but also like learn, I guess you could say, learn the harder lessons on my own. If I wasn't willing to listen to what she had to say, then I was going to learn them the hard way. And I was going to learn the hard way that it wasn't always a choice to be made on my own, to sometimes listen. And so, for me, it started when I was 12, and, I took that hit, and I remember going into the front room and sitting on the couch for a little bit, and I passed out. I remember it taking the pain away from the hurt on my arm. And then I also remember like people saying, "Oh, it's a gateway drug." And I was like, "I'll never do that. You know, I'll never do anything else besides weed." I thought I was going to be like the kid who grew up smoking weed for the rest of his life. Like, you know, weed was going to be the thing, right? And, it led to other things, you know, it was weed. And then I got into gang banging. And then crank came about for me. I remember walking in and, some of the older guys were selling a lot of it and they were in there mixing it up and there was a big old pile on the thing and they're like, "Yeah, go ahead." And I remember that night very vividly as well, you know, and it was that. And then before you know it, then after that it was, coke and weed. We're mixing them and it got heavy real quick. You know, I started using at 12 and then, by the time I was 19, it got really heavy. I ended up smoking crack for the first time at 19. And it was just like from 19 to 21 or 22, it was just like a real wave of everything. Like I was just using everything and anything I could to hide from the feelings of whatever it was that I was going through. I really didn't have any guidance at that time. I was just doing what I wanted to do. And then I hit 22 and I realized that it was a big part of why I was in and out of jail so much. And I realized that, that if I didn't stop, I was going to end up like my dad in and out of prison all his life. And I just wasn't willing to sacrifice any more of my life for the drugs. And so I made a decision to quit. And well, you know, I remember going in front of the judge and the judge, wanted to give me 16 months prison. And I was like, "Is there any, you know," I asked my public defender, "Is there any way you can get me a year local and I'll be good?" And they're like, you know, they did their magic and they're like, "Yeah, they'll give you a year local, but you with the 16 months, what do they call it? 16 months, suspended sentence. If you complete your program." And so I went into treatment with no intention of staying clean or anything or being in recovery. And something happened while I was there. And by the time I got out of treatment, I was connected to my home group. I was going to meetings. I was of service to my fellowship and things were a little better than when I went in. And so I just went with it. You know, and I've been here ever since. Yeah.
Nice, man. Nice. So, I mean, obviously, like the removing of the anxiety of just all the hustle and everything probably must have been just a huge weight off your shoulders, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. You talk about mom. I mean, obviously, it sounds like dad maybe had some issues. Mom was never an addictive personality, never had an addiction struggle at all.
She tells us a story about one time when she smoked weed and it made her super paranoid. And she was like, I never did it again.
Right.
Other drugs, I've never seen her do, ever. Really? She likes to drink from time to time, but it's rare.
It's never out of control.
Now, my dad brought the drugs into the house, brought the people around with the drugs, took money from my mom to get the drugs, like that kind of stuff. That was his behaviors. Very abusive in his ways. And my mom, I never seen any of that. Just her, like I said, the occasional drink. That was it. And she likes to, tipsy to where, she's kind of, wobbly, but nothing ever bad. Not a
interesting
drink.
So I guess maybe from a parent's perspective, right, because I kind of have like a similar type of situation, right, is that nobody can tell you to go get sober, right? Nobody can tell you to go get clean, right? And so, and I'm sure that relationship between your mother and father, right, she got to the point where it was like, if you ain't gonna do it, I can't help you do it, so this just ain't gonna work anymore, right?
Yeah. She, for her, I remember the last time she came to visit me in jail. She let me know. She said, this is it. I can't do anything for you after this. And if you don't get right this time, you're on your own. And I was like, oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
That definitely helped.
Yeah, for sure. So my, I grew up in a loving family, and I found out when I was a teenager that the man who was raising me wasn't my biological father.
Yeah,
I had another man that was basically I was conceived by, and he was a Vietnam vet and abusive relationships, growing up with his family, and he became a heroin addict for in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And came home and met my mom and was selling shit. And I mean, they lasted, I think, a year into my life before my mom's like, I'm done with you, dude. Right. So on the flip side, right, growing up, being, 17, 18 years old, having barbecues over at the house, neither my mom nor my dad had addictive personalities. And so they, they were fine with me drinking with the family,
Yeah.
They didn't see any problems. Right. And my dad was always, the man who raised me was always like, hey, if you go and party and you drink too much, just don't drive, call me, I'll come pick you up. No questions asked. And he did that for me a handful of times. Right. And I sit there and I go, I wonder if you maybe would have been a little bit more strict with me, then. But again, it's like normal people don't see, how addiction starts and how it develops and builds and gets worse and worse and worse. So you really can't fault them. They're doing the best they can, right? All parents are. You know that, right? Yeah. We're doing the best we can. Yeah. So mom, good relationship?
Yeah, great.
Great.
Yeah. For sure. Has never left my side ever, no matter what I do.
Yeah.
I've stolen cars from her. I've wrecked cars. She's never left me. And I wasn't trying to test the theory if she actually would have stuck to her word the last time she said that. All she had to say was, this is the last time I'm going to help you. And if you can't get right this time, I can't help you no more. I wasn't willing to test that either. I was going to do what she said.
Yeah. Do you think with your little one that you would approach, like if she, if they wanted to smoke something, would you be down for letting them find out the hard way, or you'd be like, oh, hell no?
I think because of my mom, I think I'd take the same path as my mom. Because
really?
Because they're not going to listen to me. Okay, I'll give you a perfect example. And I'm not the greatest parent. And some people are like, that's very irresponsible. But what I know today and what I've experience through others is that teenagers are going to do what they want to do, whether their parents allow it or not. So just recently, my kids wanted to break into an old abandoned building. It's been abandoned for some years now. And they're like, we want to go in there. And I go, you guys want, well, then if you guys are going to do this, like, I would rather be there. And they're like, would you take us? And I'm like, we'll go and we'll look into it. We'll check it out. And like, I shared this with some of my friends in recovery, and they're like, do you think that's the right thing to do? And I go, honestly, no, it's not the responsible thing to do. But I know the irresponsible thing for me as a parent would be to not be there. That would be irresponsible on my end. And so, you know, long story short, we went and we looked and we couldn't get in the building the night we checked it out. And that was that was like all they needed to detour them from even trying to get in. Cause we went and we tried to get in. And once they saw how hard it was to get in, they just kind of gave up. Right. But they were there with me. Like, I would rather it have been that way than them being there at night. Cause it's not a great place to be at night by themselves, you know? And so, that's just where I'm at. And so with that being said, like, I would rather them let me know and we discuss it than them try to hide it from me and it end up being something worse in the end.
So, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. That's a tough one. Yeah. Because I mean, again, it's like, you know, if you don't condone it, right, they're just going to go do it behind your back. Yeah. Right.
I did that. I know that from personal experience. That's why now, and I'm grateful to be present in their life, to be able to be there with them. And I preach to them, like, I've built a relationship with them to allow them to know that they can always come to me about anything and everything. There's never going to be judgment or any type of discipline if they come to me with anything.
No, for sure. I agree with you. I want my kids, you know, to know that I'm a safe space, right?
Yeah, always.
And, you know, and that's important, right? Because if they don't, then they're going to go seek advice from those that don't have their best intentions, right?
Yeah, for sure.
With regards to your mental health, what do you think, you know, being sober and stuff, have you recognized anything from a mental health perspective that you need to do address?
One of the biggest things and that I didn't see for a long time was my depression. And like, it was something that I just didn't want to look at for a long time. But, now that I know about it, like, there was a time when I was using that I had stole my mom's car, and the shame and the guilt, I couldn't face her. So I ran to my grandmother's house and I slept on my grandmother's couch for about 3 months straight. I get up once a day, eat, and my grandma was very, how do you say, codependent and allowed me that. She
enabled it. Yeah.
She enabled it. Exactly. And I slept on that couch for about 3 months. And I don't remember what happened to pull me out of it, but I was eating like once a day. I wasn't around any family. When they would have parties, I would just disappear to be away from everybody. But again, I didn't know that that's what it was until after I got clean and I started feeling those same feelings at times. And we had talked about it in my treatment. They had talked about the imbalance of our, what do they call it? The endorphins and such. Like how the chemical imbalance aspect of recovery. And, once, like, the damage that I've caused through the using of drugs has affected the chemical imbalance in me. And so because of that, at times I could be really high, I could be really low. But what I'm grateful for is that because of it now, like, I'm more in tune with myself, and I'm able to, you know, identify when it's coming or how I'm feeling or why I'm feeling the way that I'm feeling. But that's definitely been one of the things that I've had to deal with since I've gotten clean.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you say that, because I think that, you know, there's a lot of people that don't have to deal with, you know, addiction issues in their life, but they aren't really present in themselves, right? They just kind of exist. Yeah. And they don't feel, you know, self-analyze, you know, self-critique, you know, how they're doing in a day. And, you know, and then when you become clean, right, you can no longer use the vices that you used before. And so then you're left to really, really deal with, you know, to your, you know, your own devices, to really sit there and analyze, you know, what's going on. And I think, if anything, I think you're at that point, I think we're blessed in that we get to be wholly human now at this point moving forward, right?
Yeah.
We're truly wholly human. Yeah. What's been valuable for you in the education, just in NA and rehabilitation, and what do you carry with you?
There's a couple of key things. So like, I remember when I was in treatment, my counselor said something that stuck with me, and he said, we're not here to cure you, because I felt like they were trying to fix me. And I'm like, you know, the whole prideful thing. But so I go to him and I'm like, yo, like, I don't, you know, I'm not really feeling this, da 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 da. And I pour out to him a little bit. And he's like, well, why do you feel that way? And I was like, because they're like throwing this at us, and we got to go to this many meetings a week, and da 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 da. And he goes, I feel like they're trying to fix me or brainwash me. And he goes, you know, Juan, you said, we're not here to fix you or cure you. We're just here to let you know if there's ever a time when you need help that we're here and we're willing to help. And I was just like, like it, because then I didn't feel like it was forced. When he said it that way to me, I was like, okay, so I can do what I want, but there's those consequences, which I know what they are. He goes, yeah, you can leave. You don't have to stay here. He goes, but you know what happens if you leave. And I knew exactly what was going to happen if I left. I was going to go to prison. And I was like, I'm just not willing to sacrifice that. It all comes back to that, right? And so, I'm like, all right, you know, but going to my meetings, and definitely, like, going to my meetings allowed me to make connections with people, because before recovery, I didn't, everyone in my life, in one form or another, they were using something, you know, and it wasn't until I got clean and started going to meetings that I started meeting people who weren't using anything, you know. If they wanted to have a good time, they'd go and have lunch together, and they would get to know each other, and they would go fishing, or they would go to some other event where other people were hanging out where they weren't using, you know, and I became to value that. And then I started hearing about people like actually living life and building careers or making moves on their goals or building their companies or whatever it was. And this is all stuff that people where I come from weren't doing any of that. And so I started to value the relationships in my fellowship, and I wanted to stay. And so, but by the time I finished my treatment, I made all the right connections within my fellowship. And I became of service to them, and those were things that I started to value, and those were reasons I wanted to stay, because I knew it was a better life than what I had before I got clean. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. The community is of utmost importance. You know, you're not alone anymore, right? There are people that understand what you've been through, albeit it may not be exactly the same, but they feel the struggle just in the words when you talk to them, right? And there's no asterisk to the love, you know, there's no asterisk to the help, right? It's just, it's purely, it is what it is. It's altruistic, right? It's just is what it is. And they want to see people succeed, right? Because they know, you know, that pit of hell feels like, right? Of relapse and, you know, and failing and life getting out of control again.
Yeah.
Do you have any like daily routines or habits that you do that kind of help you in the day?
The main one is getting out of bed. Like so right now I'm not working. So I do my best to just stay busy, you know, and stay connected with people as well. Because, on any given day, it could be like, any one of my support group could call me and help me, not even knowing they're going to help. I'll give you a perfect example today. I wasn't sure I was going to get out of bed. I was just kind of like, it was like today. I know sometimes it's the weather, sometimes it's the day, sometimes it's just the way we feel. But I was just like laying in bed until maybe like 9, almost 10 o'clock, just watching TV, not really sure what I wanted to do with my day. My friend calls me and she's like, hey, I'm in Stockton. She's from Sacramento. She's like, what's that meeting you go to? Can you send me the information? I'm like, and I don't really get to see her a lot. She's really good people. She's like, send me all the information to the new meeting. I'm like, all right. So I send it to her and I'm like, oh shit, if she's going to be there, she's probably thinking I'm going to be there. So I should probably show up. And so I got out of bed and I took my dog and we went for a walk and got some coffee and I came back and then I got everything ready, threw it in the car to go do my friend's yard after the meeting. So I went to the meeting and I saw a couple of people that I hadn't seen in a while and I needed to see. And then I heard a message that I needed to hear, you know, and then the meeting was over and I went and did my friend's thing. And so to get back to the routine, it's like, I check in with people from time to time, with it, you know, from everywhere, anywhere, just people who check in with me, I check in with them. And so because of that routine, somebody was able to call me and let me know that they were in town and I was able to get up out of bed and out of my head and get moving, you know, and because of that routine, I built a foundation on that routine. And because of that, I get the help I needed. I get the help I need day to day, expected or unexpected, you know, and I'm grateful for that. So yeah, the routine is to just check in with people regardless of the day, whether you want to or not, pick up the phone, whether you want to or not. Those are things that I've learned to do. Yeah.
No, for sure. You know, going to meetings and stuff, right? It's almost like the gym, right? It's like, yep. you hate getting yourself going there. But then as soon as you leave there, you're like, I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I did it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. Any surprising revelations for yourself, realizations from being sober? You know, things about yourself you didn't realize and knew until you got clean.
Man, like, I was a very isolated person who hid my feelings a lot. And, I've learned how to love on a level that I never knew I could before. I didn't know I wanted to, you know. And people have taught me that along the way. You know, there's been a lot of hardships when it comes to who I've poured into. But whether it caused hurt or pain in the long run, it was all for a reason. You know, I'm not hardened like I used to be. I'm not cold. I'm not as cold as I used to be. And I'm not as isolated as I used to be. And that's because the way people have loved on me since I've gotten here and have been genuine with me, or the ones that are genuine have been genuine with me, because not everybody has been, you know, and some it took a long time to see, and others it was like from the gate. I'm like, oh, you're not as genuine as you claim to be, which is fine to me. You do you. I'm not knocking you, but I know the type of people I want to surround myself with, you know. And so for me, like, I love to do for people. I'm a giver, and I didn't know that was my nature. I had no fucking clue. Like, there was a time when I expected something in return. You was going to break me off one way or another if I did something for you. And now I don't even ask for that. And sometimes people are like, why are you doing this? Because I can, because it doesn't cost anything to do this. It did cost me nothing to show up at my friend's house and do a laundry day. Nothing. Just my time.
Yeah. Right?
And that was it, you know, and you know, for me, man, it's like, I'm on my, like, no lie, Dustin, I'm on my knees in her front yard, pulling the weeds, like a lot of weeds. And I find myself just grateful being able to do that, because there was a time when I was locked up in jail when I wished I could just be out doing anything but sitting on that bed away from the people that I love. Like, I didn't care what, like if someone came to me when I was in my cell and was like, if I let you out right now, would you go do this person's yard in a fucking heartbeat? You know what I mean? And so now I have that opportunity and I'm grateful for it. I'm just appreciative to be able to do it.
No. Nice, man. So, yeah. Well, you know, and I'm gonna give you one that you already told me about, just because I want you to talk about it, and that's your education.
Oh yeah,
education.
Well, going back to school was fun. I loved it. The diversity that it brought into my life, you know, and being able to learn some stuff about myself, like the student that I could be, and what I was able to, experience in that process, like being a top student in college. I was like, never, no fucking way. Like, there's no way, right? And the relationships that I had with the instructors while I was there, and just like allowing them to get to know me, in the process, you know, it took some of the instructors a little bit longer because I didn't interact with them as much. There was one that I interacted with a lot, but she let me know right away, like, that if I was serious about school, that she would be there to help me in any way that she could. And she meant that. I know for a fact that she meant that. And I'm just, you know, yeah, I'm definitely grateful for that experience, being able to go back to college and get my associate's degree and be able to learn what I've been able to learn through college. You know, I went back the other day, and there's so much more that college offers now that didn't offer when I was there. They offer an associate's degree in apparel design. And that's cool. That's my shit, Dustin.
Yeah.
So I was at the meeting earlier, and a lady was like, if I give you this much money, could you make me 2 shirts? And I'm like, done. And she's like, I'm so excited to see what they come out with. And like from the gate, my mind started turning, like, what am I going to, and I knew what one of the shirts was going to be, what the colors were going to be, how I was going to design it and everything. And I'm like, man. And so when I was at the school the other day, I was like, but like going back to school is a lot. I don't get paid to go back to school. Like my time for school was when I went to school, and it would be a struggle to go back right now. It would be a real struggle to go back right now. As much as I would love to learn about apparel design, you know, yeah.
You know, there's no education like self-education, my man. No. You know, I mean, and just like when you were, you know, like, I mean, you're obviously your education experience from 12 to 19 was probably way different than obviously being able to go back and being clear-eyed and, you know, and hitting it right. I think that's and I think that with anything, dude, I mean, because I've been successful and I've failed at a couple of businesses myself. I just know that they're all learning experiences. And I tell you, dude, if you got the heart to do something like that, man, you, especially with the way that media is now, right, and the accessibility to get things out to the world, right, to sell things. Well, I mean,
that was one of the things we talked about before. Like, this was before social media. This was back when MySpace was a thing, right? And that was like the tip of social media back then. We were talking about how the internet had basically gave the day-to-day man the ability to compete with the world-renowned company, right? Like, broadened the base, right? With the internet back then. That was back in 02, 03, you know, when dial-up was around. Crazy. Right. And they're talking about the internet and how it allows a normal everyday guy to build a business from the space of his own home. Right. And so, you know, to fast forward to now, the capabilities of that, like, you could do literally whatever you could build your own brand from the comfort of your own home.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
And it's wild.
It's wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
See, now my head's...
We'll talk off video and we'll chat about some things for sure, my man. Oh, okay. So somebody comes up to you and knows, you know, maybe through in passing or just maybe mild conversations, right? They're aware that you're clean and sober, right? And they're going, hey, you know, I don't know if I have a problem. I feel like at times I'm definitely in excess. And you know, I maybe want to get clean all the way, or maybe I just want to slow it down. What sort of advice would you give somebody like that?
I always suggest a meeting or two, because, and then, you know, with those meetings, if I'm there when they show up, a couple of pamphlets for sure. Cause there's some questions that we need to ask ourselves that outside of a meeting, we wouldn't normally ask ourselves, you know, and, right. And there's a couple of pamphlets, you know, am I an addict? You know, I remember reading that pamphlet and I was like, this is me. Like in every essence, this is like, there's nothing I can say no to because I've done everything this is asking, you know? And it says, you know, if you've answered truthfully to most of these questions, you may have a problem, you know? And it suggests to seek more help at that point, right? And then there's just other ones. There's just other pamphlets that help bring things to the surface. Because sometimes we like to deny it to the fullest because we don't have a problem. We're okay. We just like to party sometimes. Yeah, but has that partying ever led you to jail? If you answer that question yes, then you may have a problem, right? There's no denying that the normal person doesn't go to jail after going to the bar. You know what I mean? Some people, they'll go to the bar, you know, they may get caught for a DUI after, and that may be the only thing they ever need to go straight and never drive drunk again. You know, others, 3 DUIs down the road, you might have a problem. I don't know what that person's circumstances are, but if anyone had ever come to me, like I have in the past, I've had family and friends come to me, and they're like, you know, how are the meetings for you, or what do they do for you? And I'm like, you know, I can't really, I can share with you what it's done for me, and you've seen for yourself the change that's been in me, but I would only suggest that you come and hang out with us a couple of times and see for yourself, you know, and get to know, you know. I always suggest at least a couple of meetings to find out, to figure out if this is the path for you or not. Cause I've witnessed where people have come to meetings for, I had a friend of mine that I went to high school with. She showed up on her own. She never came to me, but she showed up on her own and started coming to meetings. And then like a year or two in, she was like, I don't know if this is for me. And I go, that's okay. No one says it has to be. I said, but only you'll know, you know? And I see her around sometimes, and I've seen her at bars after the fact, and she's fine, right? She has a job. She takes care of her kids. Like there's no, it doesn't, her life doesn't seem chaotic. Like I've seen other people leave the meetings and things don't end well most of the time, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, it's rare, but you know, we never know until we investigate for ourselves, you know?
For sure. For sure. Yeah. No, that's good stuff, man. That's good stuff. Finally, I kind of preempted you before we got on tonight. What are the misconceptions do you think that people have about getting clean or sober? I'm gonna give you one right now. You ready?
The biggest one. This I hear this all the time. People think life's gonna be boring after they get clean, and it's the biggest misconception you could ever have in life, because like life is, there hasn't been a boring, like, and I truly believe this. If your life is boring, you're just a boring person. Not to knock anybody, right? But you know, that's just the way I see it. Because like I wasn't sure what life was going to be like after I got clean. I just know that after I gave it a chance, like things got better and things got more exciting. I tell people all the time, I'm like, dude, like, I remember a majority of my weekends what I did last weekend or the weekend before. You know what I mean? And it wasn't like that before. It was like, hey, you remember, hey, dude, we went out last weekend. I'm like, yeah, don't really remember a lot of that. That's what it was like for me before I got clean. And now, like, I remember stuff. I remember trips. I remember doing things. It wasn't like that before. And so for me, like you said, the biggest misconception about getting, like, what life is like getting clean or sober is the biggest misconception is that it's boring. And that there's nothing to do and there's nowhere to go. And that's probably the biggest lie anyone could ever feed themselves.
Yeah. No, I like it. I like it. I was going to say, in the same parallel, I was going to say that we're a bunch of squares.
That's fine. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We're a bunch of squares because we don't, you know, it's like you should have seen me on the other side of the spectrum. Then you would think, no, you weren't a square. But yeah, no, for sure. I hear you, dude. That's perfect, man. That's good stuff. Ray, dude, I think we're good, bud, tonight. I appreciate your time, man. And really as always, it's been fun. And I'm getting positive feedback. And a lot of from people that, you know, I've interacted with. They're either in my, my treatment, in-house treatment, or, you know, through my IOP that I went through. Yeah. Just slowly trying to spread the word. I've actually been contemplating how do I start aligning myself up with like that big convention that happens at the end of the month in Santa Clara. Yeah. You know, and wondering if I need to make an appearance.
This is my first year. They asked me to speak there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Good for you.
So I'm pretty excited about that. I've been around, I've been of service at that convention numerous times and I've never been asked to share. And the lady called me last week or the week before and was like, yes, we would like for you to share on a special topic. And I'm like, okay. And she goes, does any of your using history or anything involve gangs? And I'm like, that's basically where it all started, you know?
Yeah.
And she's like, all right, perfect. So that's what we'll have you speaking on. I was like, all right.
Awesome, man. Yeah. Awesome. Well, good for you, man. Friday at 4:30.
Friday at 4:30.
I'm going to pencil that in. Maybe I can get myself down there to listen.
Yeah, so I'll be there all day Friday. Friday morning, I like to get there early, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. Be there all day, and then I gotta. I'll be up there Saturday as well to be of service, running, helping with the workshop meetings, like the little meetings that they have outside of the main meetings. Yeah.
Okay.
So Friday.
Very cool. Right on, man. Well, I need to see you soon, man. You got to get out to Livermore here soon. Come to another NA.
Before the convention, for sure, I'll be out in Livermore.
Okay. Cool, man. Yeah. Well, all right, brother. Well, I appreciate your time. Okay. You have yourself a good night.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that.
Take care.
You too.